Welcome to the Locate 852 podcast, bringing you insights on how you can build and scale your business with social platforms. Hosted by the leading Facebook ad strategist in Hong Kong, entrepreneur, branding expert, and the founder of Locate 852, Chris Chung.
Chris, it's great to have you on the show. Super excited to connect with you. We have a lot of mutual friends that we're just even jamming about off camera, and you were actually, you used to be in Hong Kong as well. For the people that don't know you yet, take us all the way back to baby Chris. What was your childhood like? What was your upbringing? Give us the full details.
Yeah, man. Well, I was born at a very young age. that joke never gets old. No, I was... I'm a Londoner, you know, born and raised Wimbledon, about 10 minutes away from Centre Court there in the tennis club. And I was just one of those kids that, you know, was more interested in, like, you know, skateboarding, girls and basketball, and probably in that order, to be honest. And I kind of messed up my exams the first time I took them. And my father kind of inserted his, you know, very relatively large boot up my backside and said to me, I got 1 year to retake. Otherwise, he's kind of, you know, done kind of making sure that I'm going to be okay kind of thing. So it was really serious. My dad was a very serious dude. And so I retook everything, passed everything, took my A-levels, which is, you know, what we do here in the UK, to be able to get into university. Passed them, got into university, and then quit 6 months in. And much to my father's dismay at the end of it all, I'd started working part-time at Auto Trader, which is kind of, it's still around, but it was like basically a weekly print magazine where if you had anything that moved, you would sell it in Auto Trader. So cars, bikes, boats, you know, whatever, right? And I was basically an ad salesperson. I was a telemarketer. I would, you know, call folks up and ask them if they wanted to sell the motorbike or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I figured it would be more fun being in sales than it would be being in university. And so I quit and went full time, did very well. By the time I was 21, I was outselling guys twice my age. And I've always been a pretty good sales dude. And so slowly but surely developed that kind of side of the background, got involved with the publishing industry here in the UK very early on in my 20s. I've only had like 3 or 4 jobs, dude. Like, you know, I've stuck into jobs, you know, for a number of years before moving on. I haven't bounced around all that much. And I was involved in the publishing game here for a while. And then eventually ended up getting headhunted by an international bank to go and work in the Philippines. And that was 2000. And I went over there for a couple of years. After that, set up my own firm over there. And the rest is a little bit of entrepreneurial history. And we kind of built this company up, which is still running. Got about 350 employees right now, you know, multi 7-figure industry. Slash business, and it's going great. And now we're back here in the UK and teaching people how to build expert businesses based around their experience and their expertise. And that's what we're all about.
Now, from moving from, you know, the UK to the Philippines and working there from the banking industry, what made you take the leap and say, hey, now I want to set up my own shop, I'm going to do my own thing? What made you make that decision?
One phone call. Actually, one phone call. I was I was kind of in the early stages of our consultancy firm. It was tough. It was tough going in the Philippines. People don't budget for sales and marketing training in the Philippines. They hire people to do the stuff, but then they don't train them. And so it was a hard sell to make. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was very, very tough. And I wasn't kind of, I didn't want to mess around with, like, you know, small boutique hotel staff or anything like that. Like, I was going for the big dogs. So I was going after like San Miguel Beer and, you know, 7-Eleven and all these kind of big firms, and they just didn't budget for it. So it was tough. So for the, you know, we did okay for a little while. And then eventually we kind of like maxed out all the opportunities that we could have locally. because there's only so many prospects that are at that kind of level that have got the budget. And in the end, I actually took a pretty long term, a 2-year consultancy gig in the infomercial business. So like, you know, I would work with like guys like Kevin Harrington, who was in one of the original sharks at Shark Tank. And we would meet up and, you know, do distribution deals for infomercial type products. I've even been in Kevin's offices in Miami and, you know, kind of spent time with him and all the rest of it over the years. And so what really happened was the guy that I was working with at the time, I'd been in Miami for a month, helping him shoot, write scripts, do voiceovers. So I was I was in the studio recording the whole kind of, but wait, there's more if you call, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I was actually on my way to the airport to go home after being there for a month. And he called me up and he was like, I need you to come back. You can't go home yet. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, time out. I'm going back. I haven't seen my wife for a month. I got stuff to do back over there. If you got an issue with it, we're done. And I got on the plane. And while I was at 37,000 feet on a Cathay Pacific flight, I decided to type out a letter to the guy or an email to the guy, letting him know that I was done working with him. And that was it. And literally, as I landed in Hong Kong, I was sitting in the pier, which is one of their lounges there, enjoying a nice Chivas Regal on the rocks. And I hit send on the email, and that was that. A week later, I registered a company. And we set up our call center facility, which then is now amalgamated into, you know, VA recruitment companies. We've done services. We do productized services as well. And it's kind of just, you know, the personal brand is kind of built from there over the years. So, yeah, it was one phone call. And really, the big thing for me was just like, I'm done with two things. Number one, I'm done with making somebody else more money than I'm making, first and foremost. And number two, I'm done not being in control of what I do and when I do it. And those were the two big things right there. Yes, I got very selfish very quickly and said, I want to make all the money and I want to call all the shots. And so I'm going to start my own business properly this time. And I went all in on it and we made no money for 6 months. We almost went bankrupt. I had enough money in the bank for 2 payroll periods, so basically a month. We were able, luckily, to turn it around, land a couple of good-sized clients. And like I said, the rest is history.
What would you say were some of the biggest struggles during the first couple of years of quitting, like having someone else being in charge and then you being in charge the first time? Having that experience you've taken before in order to grow your own business, what were some of the biggest struggles during the first couple of years in order to get the company up and running?
It was people, or the lack thereof of good people to hire. I think that was the biggest issue. Landing the business was not a problem for me because I'm a sales pro through and through. I have zero lack of confidence. I close anywhere, anytime, any place, anyone. You know, that's the kind of the hardcore kind of sales mentality. And I'm not talking about the sleazy kind of ABC, AIDA kind of mentality. No, I'm just very, very confident in my ability to be able to sell with finesse and to highlight benefits and features and not even worry about the close, because I'm a big believer that if you do everything right in the sales process up to that point, the close actually should happen all by itself. In fact, they should be asking for the purchase order. You know what I mean? Like they should be asking for it. And so it wasn't that. It was finding good people to execute on my vision. That was the issue. And so, you know, at first particularly as well, even though I trained thousands of people up to that point in my career over the years, I never actually hired anybody. So I'll own some of that, you know, to begin with. I made bad hires, quite frankly. And I stuck with people for too long as well. Whereas I should have hired slowly and fired quickly I did the exact reverse. And so we definitely lost, you know, a certain amount of money. We definitely lost a certain amount of time. And time in business is way more important than money when you're starting out, I believe, because time is our most valuable commodity as entrepreneurs. You can invest money, you can make money, you'll lose money. But once you do any of those things with time, it's gone forever, right? So I was more upset at myself that I kind of wasted 3-4 months finding my feet as an employer of people by making bad hires and by, you know, potentially letting good hires slip through my fingers. That was the biggest struggle for me, learning how to be a good hirer of talent. And once you crack that, the ability to grow, I believe, is very much in the palm of your hand. It's not something you have to worry, you know, or lose a lot of sleep over. Hiring people is without a doubt, you know, the biggest hurdle I have to jump over for sure.
How has your relationship with the delegation of work changed over the years? I feel like as entrepreneurs, we have this thing where we like to hold on to every bit and pieces. This is done to my standard. I don't like it done this way. You don't trust everyone. They're not going to do it as well. And we have this process of not being able to delegate effectively. So can you shed some light on how you used to delegate and how has that changed over the years in order to you make yourself become an effective person that is able to delegate effectively?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, like I said, time is your most valuable commodity and there's only one you in the business. So to enable yourself to be able to scale your business and ultimately buy more time in your day-to-day world as a business owner, you have to get good at delegating. And when I first started out, I was your typical type A entrepreneur micromanaging nightmare, right? You know, if I could do it myself, I'd do it myself. Even if I had to struggle doing something, I would do it myself. And I would very rarely delegate anything. And it led to me burning out, quite frankly. In 2009, I hit burnout hard. We're talking hospital time, right? So you learn by that lesson. When you have lessons like that, if you don't learn by them, then you're going to lose, period, right? And so, you know, you take certain chunks of that lesson to one side and you figure, I got to start doing this, I've got to start doing that, I've got to start doing that. And actually what I did is I created three lists. And this is known as my now infamous three lists of freedom exercise, which I talk about in my first book, Virtual Freedom, where what I did is I made three lists of tasks fundamentally, a list of stuff that I hated doing, a list of stuff that I struggled doing, but I was still forcing myself to do it, and a list of stuff that I felt as the CEO, as the owner of the business, that I shouldn't be doing, like my time is better spent doing other things. And once I got those lists in place, if I didn't take action on those lists, I would be doing so at my own financial peril. You know what I mean? Like, it was very clear that this was the roadmap out of that micromanaging mindset, and I had to take action on it. And so that's where the delegation came into things. And I think one of the reasons why entrepreneurs have such a big problem with delegating is because of the fact that anybody who's self-made in any way, shape, or form had to do everything at the very beginning of their business from the ground up. They needed to do everything. They needed to write all the copy. They needed to maybe even build the website. They needed to pack the boxes themselves. They needed to do all the prospecting themselves, all the hiring themselves, all the training themselves. They needed to set up their IT network themselves. Like, I did all of this. And I had no right being in an IT server room, by the way. Like, that was a disaster ready and waiting to happen. And so one of the reasons why that's true is because we don't want to relinquish control. And the moment you do relinquish control is the moment you become free as an entrepreneur, and you can buy time through delegation. And so that's been the biggest thing for me. Now I fast forward all these years later. Now I'm lazy, man. I'm not even going to play. Like, I'm a lazy dude. Like, if something hits my desk the first question I ask myself is, who's going to do this? Because it ain't going to be me. Who's going to do this? Oh, I'll fire that off to Michelle, or that's going off to Chloe, or this is going to go to, you know, David or Matt. Like, my team is very busy, very busy. And I am in my zone of genius every single day, doing only what I can do. And that's the way it should be.
Over the years, you've obviously become an expert, obviously, in the virtual assistant world. You've built a company ground up, and you've trained a lot, and you've fired a lot, and you've worked with a lot of different people. What are some of the most effective ways you've come to find when it comes to developing system and processes so you can scale effectively?
The big thing for me, and here's the thing, business period, I like simple. We need to simplify to amplify when it comes to scaling our businesses. And people make this stuff way, way too complicated. Way too complicated, myself included, earlier on. And I like to do everything as simple as possible now. If I can create a process with 3 steps instead of 8 or 9 steps, then that's the win right there. And so I like to just make everything really easy for everyone on the team to understand. And so one of the big things for me is actually screen capture videos. So if there's a task, well, let's use the example of publishing a piece of content on your website, right? So let's say it's a blog post of some variety. You've done your keyword research. You kind of know what you're going to write about. The piece of content has been written already, and now you're going to import it into WordPress, and you're going to get that thing ready to be published on the web. So you hit record at the beginning of this procedure, and you import that text into a WordPress draft blog post. Then as you're doing the work and you're laying the blog post out, you're talking over exactly what you're doing, and more importantly, why you're doing it, right? So this is the reason why we put the first paragraph in bold. This is the reason why there's keywords listed here, here, and here. This is where you're going to insert an image. This is where you're going to embed a video. This is where you're going to link to a CTA. This is the reason why that we have, you know, the last paragraph in italics, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is, but you're talking through the whole thing. The whole thing takes 30 minutes to do. When you're done and you hit the publish button, you hit the stop button on the recording. You then export that screen capture video into a video format. You upload it to Dropbox for your team to watch, and you never do that task ever again, ever. What you've done right there is you've done it one last time, and you've ultimately freed up that time that you would usually spend doing that sort of type of task. And that's just one example. Now, the big thing is here is that if at some point, let's say, for example, Michelle is in charge of doing all of my blog posts for me. If Michelle goes on maternity leave, or if Michelle is fired, or if Michelle leaves, I've still got that training now available, already filmed and shot, ready to roll as an SOP document for the person that comes in and replaces Michelle. And so again, I don't have to do it anymore. I just have to say to Mike that, you know, replaces Michelle, all of my staff, my kind of made up staff for examples, their names begin with M, by the way, if you haven't figured that out. So Mike comes in to replace Michelle, and Mike now just watches that video, and he knows exactly how I like my blog posts to be published, right? But that's just one example. There's a host of other things that you can do. And I think it's just recording your screen and talking through is way better than having, like, you know, a 25-point PDF document that you kind of share with new staff members when they come your way. But the most important thing when it comes to systems, processes, and things like that is that you allow yourself to take on board the fact that nothing is finite. Nothing is final. You can always go back and tweak and make it better. Maybe there's a piece of software that comes out that's going to be perfect for speeding one particular process up by 50%. Why would you not use it? Why would you not incorporate that, right? So being strict enough to put all those processes and SOPs in place, yes, but being agile enough to understand that something might change in the future that enables you to be able to then go back, change things, and make it even more effective.
How do you run your day-to-day now? What have you built? And, you know, through whether that be through virtual assistants, the way that you operate through email, I know that you have a certain way of limiting how long your email replies are. You have canned responses. You have different things that you've set up in order to run your life in the most laziest way possible, but also in the most effective way. What are some of the things that you think that all entrepreneurs can instantly take and see, you know, really move the needle with the way that they spend their time?
Well, dude, I mean, that's just like that's a whole nother show right there. For me, it really comes down to priorities. And I think that those priorities, those priorities have changed quite a bit over the years. You know, as I've gotten older, wiser, tireder, you know, it really just comes down for me personally to be in my zone of genius every single day, only doing what I can do personally within the company every single day. And nowadays, that's a combination of meetings with my management staff to inspire them and motivate them and lead them and guide them, to working with mentoring and coaching clients through our coaching program, like the Youpreneur Incubator or my Inner Circle Mastermind, which is called the Round Table. And so that's what I do every day now. And it's all down to priorities. The one big priority that's shifted quite a bit in the last couple of years is the priority of me, of Chris, because without Chris firing on all cylinders, everything else is kind of secondary. It's not going to work. And so doubling down, and I, you know, you can call it a midlife crisis if you want, doubling down on health and fitness, doubling down on the importance of downtime away from the business. And I'll tell you what I've done to kind of do this. And then lastly, doubling down on what I call my MMI time, or my me, myself, and I time. Because, you know, as much as I love my four children and my wife very dearly, I need my space. I need to be able to have some white noise and some just, you know, some Chris time, right? So first thing in the morning, as soon as I get up, we have a home gym on the property here. I'm in the gym. I'm stretching for 15, 20 minutes. This old body has to start off slowly in the morning, Chris. So I'm stretching, then I'm on the elliptical for usually 30 minutes. Then I'm doing very, very small amount of strength training, no more than usually 15, 20 minutes. I have zero intention of being the next Arnie. And so I just keep it light, no more than usually, you know, 10 kg on the dumbbells. I'm in good shape for a 49 year old guy and, or almost 49 year old guy. And, then I doubled down. You know, I've done a lot of things, like I've invested in a nutritionist to help me with diet and supplementation. I've invested in monthly massages and monthly chiropractic adjustments. I clearly invested in, you know, the fitness side of things by putting tens of thousands of pounds into a home gym and yoga studio for my wife, right? And so all of that side of things is kind of ticked off. Second thing is time away from work. This is so important for modern day entrepreneurs, because thanks to the smartphone, we are more connected to each other than ever before. However, if you think about it logically, we're also quite disconnected from each other as well. People are more likely to text each other than get on the phone and actually have a conversation, which is why I love doing these interviews so much, because I get to be able to talk with individuals rather than just text, right? So when it comes to my personal downtime in regards to being away from the business side of things, there's two things. First and foremost, sketching. I'm an urban sketcher, so I like to go out with my sketchbook and sketch buildings. And that's what I do to kind of relax and kind of take it easy. And also bonsai. I have been practicing bonsai on and off for probably two decades. I got very much into it when I got back here to the UK and we had a good sized property. It went from me saying to my wife, I'm going to get a couple of trees and, you know, a couple of good trees, nice size trees, and look after them. And it's kind of spiraled out of control. I don't know how many trees I've got now, Chris. I've lost count. And I can't even put a number on it. So, you know, it sounds really strange also, but you can learn a lot as a business owner by practicing something like bonsai, which requires a lot of patience. You know, you only get one growing season every year for trees, right? Spring and summer. And so you've got to feed your trees. You've got to prune your trees. You've got to wire your trees. You've got to repot your trees. You've got to do all these things. That's patience, because we all want this beautiful Chinese juniper to look like something that can go in a bonsai show tomorrow. But you know what? It'll take you 20 years to get there. And so I've learned a lot from practicing bonsai when it comes to getting involved, you know, building a business as well. You can put plans in place, but you can't speed those plans up. Not really. Like when you put something on the calendar and you know it's happening in 6 months from now, you can't move that once it's on the calendar. Like you've got to wait 6 months for that event or that webinar or that JV to actually happen, right? And so, yeah. And then lastly, you know, really getting to the point where that me, myself, and I time is a priority every day as well. So I have an hour blocked out just before lunch every day. Monday to Thursday. I don't work Fridays. I haven't for about 6 years now. And every day I get an hour of MMI time that's on my schedule. And all my staff know that if they try and contact me, they'll be ignored. And that time is for me to do what the heck I want to do. Sometimes I read a book. Sometimes I'll listen to a podcast. Sometimes I'll watch a TV show or a movie. Sometimes I'll just go for a walk with my dog, you know? And I think it's important to have that balance away from the business in order to be able to double down and grow the business as well.
I want to touch upon your Youpreneur incubator coaching. Obviously, there's a lot of listeners right now who are starting entrepreneurs and beginning entrepreneurs, or even thinking about pursuing entrepreneurship. What is you working with a lot of people at that incubator level? What are some of the biggest differentiators between, you see, the ones that are having good results and the ones that perform great results?
Oh, dude. Yeah. Good question. So here's the thing. When you're at the beginning of your journey, or you know, not like right at the beginning, you know, you can learn a lot. If you're right at the beginning, you can learn a lot from listening to shows like this, from reading books, from attending free webinars. Like, you don't need to spend money to learn how to grow your business, right? There's no seminars you need to go to or anything like that. You know, like back in the old days, right? Where you get like 40, you know, you're like 6 hours of pitching and like 1 hour of content, right? You know, nothing like that at all anymore. You can grow a business, I believe, to, you know, $2,000-$4,000 a month in recurring revenue in one way, shape, or form relatively easily. If you just do a couple things, first and foremost, you have to be clear on who you're serving. So you've got to niche down. You nail your niche. Understand that, you know, you have one problem, one solution that you provide to that one problem that your niche is experiencing. And just go all in on that for 1 year. Don't talk about anything else. Don't try and introduce anything else. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're selling your time as a consultant. It's not the most scalable, but you can make $3,000-$5,000 a month selling your expertise or what you're passionate about relatively easily, right? The big differentiating factor between the entrepreneurs inside of our incubator that really start to pick up speed after that first year or so, and those that kind of just plateau out or disappear, the big differentiator, consistency. All the way. Consistency. Shiny object syndrome kicks in, or as I call it, squirrel syndrome, right? Like, you know, I sit here, I've got a big, huge window in front of, behind the monitor here. And you know, I have a good sized property, about an acre or so of property in front of me. And I see squirrels all day long going up and down. You know, we got like 400-year-old chestnut trees in our property. They're going up and down all day long. And sometimes it's, you know, I like to watch them, right? But you could be in the middle of work and you can see something in the corner of your eye. There's a squirrel right there in the corner of my eye. Squirrel, right? So it's that squirrel syndrome. Oh, TikTok. Oh, Instagram stories. Ah, YouTube, right? You want to do all the things to grow your business. Bad move. bad move. If you split your time amongst a number of different ideas and concepts, then your time is going to be badly spent, plain and simple. And so really focus on, like I said, that one niche, one problem, one solution, one channel. And when I say channel, I don't mean YouTube channel specifically, but either YouTube, podcast, blog, Instagram, whatever it is, that one channel, and really just that 1 year focus of just consistently showing up, the five ones all day long. And if you show up consistently like that, you will start to pick up speed. You will start to pick up momentum. And then at that point, you can start looking at other revenue models. You can hire a VA or two to help you and all that sort of stuff. But that's the biggest differentiator, man, is squirrel syndrome and not being consistent, without a doubt, without a doubt.
What advice do you give? I'm sure you get asked this a lot because we do too as well, especially because obviously when we're just talking off camera, we hope. A lot of people, high level business owners, scale very, very high spends through advertising, through Facebook, through Instagram. And a lot of people are obviously over the past couple of years, people are into drop shipping. People want to do Amazon FBA. And there's a lot of agencies out there and everyone's an expert at marketing and they want to jump in and say, hey, Chris, we want to do our own thing as well. But I don't know, you know, I'm brand spanking new. I've probably done hours of homework through YouTube, but I don't know what niche to go to. Who should I serve? What advice do you give these people when they come to you saying, I don't know, I have a skill set, but I don't know what niche I should go into in order to make this work?
It's, you know, particularly when you're younger, that's a hard decision to come to. And not for any other reason other than the fact that you just don't have that much life experience. I'm not knocking anybody in their early 20s, mid 20s that want to start a business. Hey, go do your thing, without a doubt. But I think you have to learn a fair amount about the world, about the way business is done, about the way people do business in a plethora of different industries. You have to learn a lot about yourself before you can figure that out as well, I think. And really one of the questions that you can ask yourself, and actually you will as an entrepreneur ask yourself this question probably every 3 to 4 years or so, because we go through seasons as business owners as well. We go through, you know, eras as we grow. Our interests change. You know, if you'd have asked me 20 years ago in my late 20s, if, you know, I'd have had the patience to sit and watch a tree grow for years and years to get it looking the way I wanted to, I'd have been like, are you crazy? I'll just go out and buy the tree the way I want it to look, right off the shelf. I can do that right now, by the way, buy any tree. But what's the point? Like, I'm getting involved in the hobby to be able to grow the tree myself, not to be able to just buy someone else's tree, right? So the one question you will ask yourself is, what do people come to me for in regards to asking for help on a certain thing on a regular basis? What do they come to me for help on a regular basis? Do they know that I run Facebook ads for a company? Maybe I'm still in employment and they're coming to me because they know that's what I do every single day. I do 40, 50, you know, hours a week on it. Okay. I'm seen as a bit of a Facebook ad specialist in my circle of friends. Maybe I can start up my own Facebook ad agency. You know, maybe you are a junior football coach at a high school. Man, people are coming to me, you know, asking questions how they can get their kids to become a better soccer player. Maybe I can start my own soccer school. Maybe I can shoot videos on YouTube and build out my personal brand, teaching people how to take free kicks properly. Or, you know, that sort of type of thing. So that simple question of what do people come to me for help on a regular basis? That right there is a good place to start when it comes to figuring out what kind of business you can begin to grow. But here's the important thing. It doesn't need to be that, whatever that is. It doesn't need to be that forever. You can pivot. You can change. And you will, plain and simple. look at my career over the last 20 years, I've gone from, you know, sales and marketing pro to virtual assistant expert to personal branding expert to, you know, expert business growth mentor. And I'm still owning and operating several different businesses above and beyond everything else that you see me do online. That's because I've gone through my own seasons. And as I've grown my businesses over the years, I've been able to pick up a whole bunch of different experience around a bunch of different industries. And when I want to make a change, and this is where the personal brand element comes in so strongly, if you attract the right type of people into your world, into your ecosystem, they will follow with you. They will pivot with you as your interests change. And that's the beautiful thing. That's the powerful thing about growing a personal brand.
I'm a big believer of what got you here will not get you there.
Amen. Absolutely.
How have you, now that you've grown, you know, multiple companies doing, you know, going from zero to six figures for your first company, six to seven, seven to eight, in order to scale up in those different phases, what have you had to change in order to be able to scale whilst actually making more money?
Oh, so easy to answer that question. I've gotten out of my own way, plain simple. I've hired people that are better than me at the things that I've tried to do for too long or struggled to do for too long. I have an integrator that works with me, and her name does begin with M, believe it or not. And she's been working with me for about 5 or 6 years now. And the things that she does for me on a daily basis, like, you know, managing our ads folks, building out our course portals, tweaking, testing, changing stuff in our email funnels. That's what she does. She's the go-between between me and all the other folks in the team that do all those things individually. She oversees everything. If I had to do her job now, I would do it, but a couple of things would happen. Number one, I wouldn't be doing it as well as she does it. Number two, I wouldn't be making as much money as I do, because I would be stuck in that role instead of in my zone of genius, mentoring and coaching folks. And number three, I would not be happy, man. And an unhappy or a disillusioned entrepreneur is an ineffective one, plain simple. And so that's been the biggest differentiator for me in terms of scaling specifically, is getting out of your own way, being the visionary that you are, and hiring those higher level players in your business to help execute on that vision. And that's been the biggest thing for me.
What would do you recommend entrepreneurs when, let's say, they have a business going and they're, you know, they've exactly, just like you've said, gone to that point where they're making, you know, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 a month, where, you know, over a year they're making enough where they can live comfortably if they're mm-hmm. young and single. What would be the first hire you would recommend them to make? Would that be a VA in order to take off specific task, or would that be like an integrator, just like the one that you just mentioned, in order to then manage other things? What advice do you have for people to make their first hire?
It really depends on where they're at revenue wise. I think, you know, if you're at like $4,000 or $5,000 a month, month in, month out, you're comfortable, and people can live very comfortably on that kind of money, even after tax and whatnot. Like, they can live comfortably, only if they're single. If they got kids, forget about it. But if you're at that kind of level, you want to be hiring a VA in today's world. It was different 15 years ago, but today that's what you want to be doing. In fact, very specifically, a phrase that I coined probably 2011, something along those lines, is a general VA or a GVA. And that's the type of person that will come in, they'll manage your calendar for you, they'll update your social for you, they'll manage your email for you. You know, they'll do all that stuff that you can do perfectly well, but it takes time. It's time-consuming work, busy work, right? Not necessarily productive work. And that GVA hire, when you're at like $5,000, that's the difference between you being stuck at that or getting the 10K in my mind. Now, once you get the 10K, you're at that six-figure mark per year. An integrator or a project manager, and it can actually be the GVA that's been with you for a certain period of time. You promote them and then hire somebody else to replace them. That integrator role or that PM role, that's the difference between you going from 100K a year to a quarter of a mil to half a mil, you know, and beyond. And I think so, you know, we've seen a theme in this conversation. Get out your own way. Hire the right people. Don't try and do stuff that you struggle with. Bring people in that can do stuff better than you. You know, an entrepreneur's growth, scalability, and ultimately their success will directly be attributed to the people that they surround themselves with every single day. And I'm not just talking about team as well. I'm talking about peers, like-minded entrepreneurs. That's why masterminds are so damn important. Like if you think that a mastermind is a waste of money from an investment standpoint, you're just, can I call it? Like you're stupid. You're just stupid. Like I've traveled, you know, 15,000 miles round trip for a weekend to sit in a room for a weekend with 20 people who are a hop and a skip ahead of me so I can get to where they are in 12 months. And I'll do it every day. I'd make that kind of choice every day. So surrounding yourself with the people who get it, who understand what journey we're on, and then also from the team perspective, that can help you rise up and become better at what you do and serve the folks that you feel called to serve. There's a theme there, you know, there's a theme there. And I think you've got to keep it real to yourself. Like there's only so many hours on the day. There's only so much you can do effectively. So stay in that zone of genius and focus on what you should only be doing and bring other people in that can help you do it.
I have a two-part question. This is more so on Chris's mentality. What, now that you're at this current stage in your life, you're happily married, you have four kids, you have you make a good living, you got multiple businesses, what makes you tick in order to get up every day and get up after it, and what keeps you up at night?
That's a good question. Not much keeps me up at night nowadays. It's probably a combination of healthy exercise, a good diet, and decent magnesium supplements in the evening. and maybe the odd shot of decent scotch from time to time before bed. No, I don't really feel like much keeps me up anymore. If anything, actually, it's excitement in terms of what gets me out of bed in the morning. To answer the first part of your question, there's an actor who's no longer with us. His name is Jack Lemmon, a big American actor. And he was very famous for coming up with the phrase of sending the elevator back down. And so when he became super successful, he, as he got older and he was taking less and less parts, he would mentor young up-and-coming actors and actresses for free. And it was his way of giving back to the industry that it's given him so much in his life. And so you said, like, you know, when you reach the top, you got to send the elevator back down. And I love that mentality. I love it so much. And it's a combination of that quote from Jack Lemmon and another quote from another person that's no longer with us, whose name is Zig Ziglar, another big American dude. And Zig used to say that you can have anything in life that you want if you help as many other people as possible get what they want in life. And it's that kind of circle of life scenario. And those two quotes, they're the things that get me out of the bed in the morning. I genuinely want to serve the next generation of entrepreneurs. I genuinely want to show up for them and teach them all the mistakes I made so that they can hopefully listen to me and avoid those mistakes and springboard their own journeys to success much, much faster than I, you know, experienced. So yeah, Jack, Zig, Bruce, you know, Bruce Lee, I'm a big lifelong fan of Bruce Lee. Bruce used to say, absorb what is useful. and cannot agree more with that. Everything else that is not going to help you get to where you want to be, you shouldn't be spending time on that. And so, hey, if it's your jam to binge a Netflix series and, you know, invest, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours of your life into that, go for it. And don't get me wrong, I watch the odd Netflix series as well. But if you are in the infancy of your business growth, that 12 hours that you would binge on Netflix is much better invested in listening to podcasts, reading the right books to provide problems, or rather solutions to the problems that you're experiencing. Netflix ain't going nowhere. The show will still be there in a couple of years. Figure out what you need to do now and take action on that, you know?
Before I ask you my last question, I know you've done tons of interviews, you've done tons of podcasts, you've had a lot of people on your show as well. What is one question that I should have asked you that I didn't?
Oh, it's a good one. I don't know, man. You asked some pretty good questions, Chris. I've done a lot of these interviews. This was a pretty good one. I don't know if I have an answer to that question. I think, you know, the thing is that there are so many entrepreneurs out there that are crushing it, that are on shows like yours. Like you mentioned, a couple of our mutual friends that have been on the show before. You know, Phil Jones become a good friend over the last kind of 5 years or so. I know he's been on the show. And I think that, you know, maybe you could have asked me what that one big life-changing book was for me, or, you know, what that one big life hack was for me, you know, something along those lines maybe. But the fact of the matter is that my opinion is just as important and no more important than everybody else's opinion when it comes to that stuff. And I think that, you know, I talk about marketing like a magnet and how you should attract the best and repel the rest. And that means attracting the right type of people into your world, not just customers, but, you know, suppliers, peers, you name it. And at the exact same time, repelling away all the other folks that are out there that don't get you, don't like you, don't like your vibe. We don't need those people. You know, the people like day 29 of the 30-day money-back guarantee, they want their, you know, $100 back. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. I don't want those people in my world, you know? And so, yeah, that's maybe what you could have asked me. I don't know, man. You asked some good questions, dude.
My last question for you is, if you were to be stripped away of all of your money, resources, and network today, and at the start all over again tomorrow, what are the first three things you would do and why?
First three things I would do. Well, first and foremost, I'd get my wife on board. Can't stress the importance of having a, you know, a supportive spouse if you're married or you're with a partner. I would definitely get her on board, and she is on board, and she helps me run all the businesses. She takes care of all the ops and the finance stuff, so I can stay in my zone of genius, right? The second thing I would probably do is I would spend as much time as I could afford in figuring out what that one big problem was that I was going to solve. So many people mess up on this, Chris. And I get it. Like you want to start something, you want to get moving with something, but if you don't have a very clear picture of who it is that you're helping and how you're helping with them, your trajectory towards success is going to be a lot, lot slower. I'm not saying that you won't get there, but it's going to be a lot slower for sure. And I think the third thing that I would do is, and this is the one thing that I wish I started doing years and years ago, way earlier than I did, I would have gotten more active online in terms of creating content, and providing value, putting value out into the world much earlier on than I did. You know, I started blogging in November of 2009. And I started podcasting in April of 2010. Now, I know that's 12, 13 years ago, respectively. Sounds like a long time ago, but I was already building businesses for 5 or 6 years up to that point. And I wish that I'd put more of that early part of my journey out there. You know, you can go down into the depths of my YouTube channel to see, you know, horrifically badly shot videos of me walking around my call center and bad lighting, bad audio, bad shirts, bad jackets, everything. But that's part of the journey. And I wish I could go back and see more of that. You know, the perfect example is as we made the decision to leave the Philippines and relocate back here to the UK a few years ago, that few months leading up to us leaving the Philippines, I did a weekly vlog. And it's on my channel. It hasn't got tens of thousands of visits or anything like that or views, but we have that now to be able to go back and look back on and how we went through that change as a family. And you know, I also, my daughter now is four and a half. She runs around like crazy, like she owns a joint, but I have images of her on my shoulder as, you know, a 9 month, 10 month year old baby walking up and down the aisle of business class on a Cathay flight to London. I can't, you know, if I hadn't shot that video, I wouldn't be able to look back on that. So yeah, those are the three things I do first up.
Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. For the people that want to keep up with you, follow what you're doing, potentially even work with you, where's the best place to find you?
ChrisDucker.com. I wouldn't be much of a personal brand entrepreneur if I didn't have my own domain name, would I? But yeah, ChrisDucker.com is the place to go. There's links to everything else on there. And if they're on Instagram, at ChrisDucker, that's where I spend most of my time social-wise.
Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.